got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, all right, y'all. All across the USC, Compton, Watts, Bay to LA, Pomona, California, from Valley to Valley, we represent that killer Cali. So if you're keeping it real on your side of your town, you tune in to Gangsta Chronicles.
Gangsta Chronicles, we gon' tell you how it goes.
If I lie, my nose will grow like Pinocchio. We gon' tell you the truth and nothing but the truth.
Gangsta Chronicles, this is not your average show.
You're now tuned into the real MCA, Big James, and Big Stale.
This is strictly from the streets.
Hello.
We represent the streets.
Welcome to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast, a production of iHeartRadio and Black Effect Podcast Network. Make sure you download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles. For my Apple users, hit the purple mic on your front screen, subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles, and leave a 5-star rating and comment. We'd like to welcome everyone to another episode of Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Now, I want y'all to keep our homeboy, our brother MCA, in prayer. He's doing fine. Couldn't be with us tonight because he's taking care of a medical issue. Nothing bad, so don't start no rumors out there. We got Big J in the house, man. Tonight, we got a special guest, the Professor Melly Mel, the Hood Professor. Man, what's happening with you, Mel?
Man, you know the vibe, man. I'm just chilling, man. How you doing, James?
I'm good, my brother. I'm good.
Still just told me, man, you probably out riding that motorcycle.
No, man, I ain't got the grandson, boy. I was getting that rest in.
You got to do that, man. I can't
get it when he here. You know.
Okay, got you.
He got a lot of energy. I'll be running all over.
Man, the kids don't. They don't never. Once the 2-year-olds on up, man, they run all day.
All day.
All day.
One of the things we was talking about earlier. What exactly is the man code, fellas?
Man code is staying on code, man. Knowing what your code of conduct is, man. You know that's usually you get that in your culture conditioning, but it comes from your father. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of these guys are being reared and raised up by women. So, you know what I mean? It kind of speaks for itself. When that female element is part of a man's thinking, it become emotional, very emotional. So they don't know how to process like a man or like a man would normally, you know what I mean? Because times have changed and a lot of women are just raising, you know, man boys.
Well, yeah. My mom raised 5, 3 sons. Uh-huh. When daddy wasn't in the household, you know, we pretty much did what we wanted to do. And and by far, you know, none of her sons were timid. You know what I'm saying? And you know, I give her credit for raising 5, but, you know, I think without the dad, you know, we ain't afraid of nothing. So we tend to veer off into our own shit and start doing what we see in the streets. And that's what
that's true. That's true, though, James. But during your time, you had uncles, granddaddy. You had somebody coming through, man. You know what I mean? Yes. There was somebody that was right there. You know what I mean? So yeah. We're talking about two different eras. You know what I mean? Where this era right here, man, this Generation Z, man, come on, man. They don't. We used to just smoke weed and drink a little drink. Now they doing mollies, syrup, you know, drink. You know what I mean? A little PCP, a little powder. They getting high on 10 different things.
The doors is open for being taught the street code, opposed to learning and thinking for yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And you know, we knew what time to head back to the house. You know what I'm saying?
We definitely had that.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So these cats today are totally different. You know, we have the lack of loyalty because don't nobody understand what that means. They didn't grow up with that, so they're not conditioned for that. You know, just you don't have that 100 like you used to have when we was growing up back in the days. You know, you got kids knocking on doors, shooting at the parents. Parents ain't got shit to do with gangbanging.
Man,
these niggas are, you know, being up close and personal. That was one of the rules. You don't go
taboo.
Yeah.
That's taboo. You know, do that.
Then we had respect for the churches. Even though we were fucking monsters and doing the street, we didn't go and tag on a church.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
At
just
all.
Certain things we didn't do, opposed to everything they doing today. You know what I'm saying? And we could take away because the daddy wasn't there. I mean, we can honestly say that. But the kids these days, some of them got both of their parents. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
But still out there doing the same funky ass shit that everybody else is doing.
Right.
They're not thinking for themselves.
There's a book, man. It's called The Man.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Okay. Keep going.
Okay, there's a book called The Man Not, right? And it's by a guy named Tommy J. Curry. Man, it is a great read. And it kind of just, it taps into a lot of different areas of manhood, what manhood is and what manhood is not. I lost my mic for a second. Let me see it come back on.
You good?
I'm
gonna write a book called Think for Yourself.
Think for Yourself. That's a good title.
A lot of motherfuckers don't think for themselves. They're you know, it's one thing of being taught right and wrong, and then it's another thing to be taught just being stupid, a foolish way. And a lot of these cats out here are being taught a foolish way. Like our nephews, my nephews want to be gangbangers, but they see what it done to uncles and cousins and the uncle's homeboys, but they still want to be a part of. Everybody want to play and have a position and nothing. You know what I'm saying? And I just call it just think for yourself. You if you can see and absorb the shit that's been going on watching uncles, because aunties didn't let the kids, so we thought our nieces and nephews wouldn't be involved in this type of shit. But just like in Compton, now today you got the homies' kids killing each other. You see what I'm saying? We all grew up together, but our kids are at war.
And that's crazy.
And the only thing to separate them is a boulevard, right? A street.
That's it.
Because they sat virtually in the same proximity of one another. They went to the same schools. They see each other. They go to the liquor store. They share the liquor store and the gas station. So how did we get there, James?
Every year, shit breaks down in the neighborhood. All the cats that we call big homies or whatever are gone. the ones that are here maybe strung on drugs. The younger kids, younger generation don't respect, don't know how to respect the elders, the elders, the big homies, however you choose to word it. They don't respect mama, you know what I'm saying? Because now they believe that the homies got their back opposed to their mama having their back. You know, family. The hood turns into the family. The street code of today is the homies and what the homies do. You know, nobody out there and these kids have never been taught how to think for self. So it don't matter that, you know, they never broke bread with each other. The big homies, we all grew up breaking bread with each other. But these kids, they never broke bread with each other. You feel me? So it's just a lack of. And then the guys that you got in the hood of, you know, 50 and over, 45 and over, they become the big homie now. That's why they still trapped where they at, because they want to be the big homies. But they don't get it. So how can the blind lead the blind?
Yeah, and you know, y'all both said some really like stuff that's just real on point. Melly Mel said something, he mentioned something earlier that a lot of these guys don't have a father figure in the house. And see, I think with that father figure, you know, like even though my pops wasn't physically in the house with me, I had a stepdaddy, right, that was real no nonsense. And I had uncles that was coming home from prison or whatever like that, telling me, hey, there ain't no place that you want to go. So they pretty much gave me what the definition of a man was. You know, them dudes didn't sit on their ass all day and, you know what I'm saying, and just chill. They went out and worked and had jobs and shit, had hustles, had shit, you know. So I was taught from an early age that a man is supposed to provide for his household. A man is supposed to do this. I got certain tendencies to this day. Like if I see my wife taking out trash, I get in my son's ass. I'd be like, you know, what is your mama doing taking trash outside? That's your job.
Right.
That's your job at the house. If somebody breaking the house, what we going to do? Stay upstairs and hide, and the woman go downstairs and hold it down? You know, no, but it don't work like that.
That would break the cycle. What you doing with your kids at home today, you there. That breaks the cycle of how you grew up. You know what I'm saying? The shit that I'm doing, raising grandkids. You know, I ain't supposed to be raising my grandkids. My kids supposed to be raising their own kids. You supposed to come fuck with granddaddy and grandmama on the weekend.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
So I got a question for both of you guys.
What's that?
What is the hardest good in the world?
The hardest good doing right.
The hardest hood in the world. Hood. HOOD. The hardest hood in the world.
Steel, James, 8. Y'all niggas better give me my $5. I put that on the set. I need to go get me some watermelon. My motherfucking feet fucking with me. Gangsta Chronicles, my ass. Pay Granny her money. This Gangsta Granny. Y'all know me. Where you at?
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where you at? This is OG Gangsta Granny, and the Gangsta Chronicles podcast is back in effect. Get ready for some of that G shit and blaze up some Wanamera.
Parenting. There you go. Parenthood.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Parenting.
That's the hardest hood in the world, man.
It's the hardest because I'm going to tell you this too right here. I think sometimes we've been too good of parents because I look at my kids sometimes. It's just like little stuff like, you know, my wife would say she going to the grocery store to buy something to cook for dinner, right? The kids just be on some shit like, oh, we want Chipotle. We want, you know, Chick-fil-A. When I was a kid, that type of shit was luxury. We went to McDonald's. It was like a luxury. You get to go to McDonald's. And today, man, these kids just look at shit like that like it's supposed to happen. You know what I mean?
No, that's right. Called pacifying, dog. We pacify our kids and give them what they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like me, I try to give my kids and my grandkids what I didn't get from my father. What I didn't get from my mother. And at the end of the day, you wind up hurting them because you pacify. Now they become adults and they still want and think you're supposed to give.
Mm-hmm.
So what's also interesting is how these kids are hardwired to dismiss the facts that we are laying out because of their own local thinking. The facts that we are laying out right here, the fact that we sit on this live and we give them straight up data, facts, statistics. They are hardwired in their minds to just simply dismiss it. Right?
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, sometimes I tell my sons some shit that I don't been through already, and they'll look at me, well, it was different back then, Pops. I'm like, what's different? You know, what
the
was
the time of the day, that's all.
Yeah,
that's
you know. It. And what I noticed with these, and you know, it ain't all bags. You got some young kids out there that's handling their business, right?
Uh-huh.
But I noticed for the most part, man, we live in an era to where dudes can't take no kind of this slightest little hint of resistance. They ready to give up on some shit. You know what I mean? And I tell my kids every day, life is hard as a motherfucker. I say, you think I like doing half the shit I do, but it's what it is. You know, it's what you have to do is what your purpose is. You know what I mean? You know, you got car notes, you got mortgages, you got shit to pay for. So you got to get off your ass.
The world is moving, man. Because every moment, every nanosecond, change is occurring. Whether you want to be a part of it or not, it's happening. So you got to get with the program or else, you know what I mean? You look like the dude that's standing down on the corner in front of Aiken's store with the 40-ounce, still got a jerry curl, telling about he from the hood. All right, you got the dude over in Santana Block standing in front of Brownies on the backside with a 40-ounce, telling about, yeah, man, I'm down for the hood. You got them cats right there. And then you got these youngsters looking at that, but they don't realize that's the horror movie right there in front of their face. That's going to be them in 10 years. But they don't seem to take that into account. You know what I mean? Because we all, these eyes right here, your eyes is the lens to the movie that you're filming. right? You're right here, right now, you know? So you want to be the best version of yourself at all times, you know what I mean? But people just take things for granted in our communities that things is somehow just going to work itself out. They don't have to put no time and energy into working it out. They just want you, like, they want James to maybe come fix it or take their hand and show them what to steal. They want you to do me, you know what I mean? They think that somehow we're going to just go in the backyard to the money tree and just fill it up and hand it to them, you know?
Yeah, well, you know what? And that seeps over. It's a lot of grown-ass sorry niggas that think that way. I'm going to tell y'all, James, no, you would be surprised at the amount of phone calls I get from people. And I don't mind people calling me for help or asking for help if you're willing to do for self. But you'll get somebody to call you and say, hey, man, I want to put together a podcast, right? I want to do something. You help them get it up, get it set up. Next thing you know, they're calling you every day because they pretty much want you to come and do the shit with them. And you don't already put all kind of man hours into them, don't did all kind of shit, don't did this. Now you're getting to where you're not just investing your time, but now you invest a little bit of money. Because it's like, you know what, this nigga needs.
And you're losing money still, because if you're spending time over there for free, you're losing money where you could be gaining money on your own shit.
Exactly. And that's what I tell people. I say, shit, me and James got our own damn platform. We could be over there doing that shit. At least we know we getting a dollar from that shit, you know. But you would get people, and the moment you tell these motherfuckers no, it's like watching the reaction to a little four-year-old kid when you tell them they can't have no more candy or cookies or some shit because they get mad. Oh, fuck you, you funny acting. Because, see, the one thing about a nigga, and I ain't talking about black people, I'm talking about niggas, period. You could tell them niggas yes a million motherfucking times. The first time you tell them motherfuckers no, they forget about all the yeses. Now you all kind of bullshit motherfuckers. You know, you lend a motherfucker, you let a motherfucker hold a few dollars, right? And this is just a thing about being a principal. I was taught coming up, you don't borrow from somebody. I ain't no borrowing type of nigga, no way. But if I get something from another man, you're supposed to give that shit back to him. Whether family, whether it's family, whether it's whatever. And I tell my kids all the time, you know, don't get into that thinking, because like I tell my sons, if they come to me, pops, you got a few dollars I can borrow? I say, you mean borrow or have? It's a difference. You got to be clear.
It's a very difference.
Because if you tell me that you borrowing it, that means I expect mine back.
Expect it back.
Just like I gave it to you.
It's different between somebody in the streets or somebody at home, in a sense. But it kind of falls back on you. If you know a motherfucker ain't got a job and he hang on the block all the goddamn day, he ain't doing nothing. If a motherfucker ain't getting up, being productive, and a motherfucker can't buy his own drink, his own weed, everybody got habits, can't buy a cigarette, and it's the same motherfucker every day. Let me get a smoke. You ready to give him $300-$400? But yeah, it's a homie. You give him $400. Don't plan on saying that shit back.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You can't be that's mad at real him shit. You already knew not to get this motherfucker nothing.
Right. Well, you know, my thing is, James, with certain motherfuckers, and I know their tendencies, I do what I call buy them out my life. If I know a motherfucker.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
And he asked me for something. Yeah, sure, you can borrow that $200. I'll give it to his ass because I know I ain't going to never hear from his punk ass again.
He gonna break his neck when he see you from trying to hide from you because he don't want you to see
exactly. You don't want to pay it back.
Because, James, because how many times, and this fall under the man code to me, too, because I tell people all the time, I ain't never been a gangbanger, but I tell you why all my friends are gangsters, because most of them is the most loyal, trustworthy motherfuckers you can meet because they live by a certain code. If they get something from you, they will give it back, and 9 times out of 10, they ain't gonna never ask you for shit because they got their own. You feel what I'm saying? And it's like,
good brothers out there, man. You
got it's a lot of good brothers out there. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of real solid street cats. And what it come down to, man, really, I'm gonna tell you where all this shit come from. Y'all remember when the 80s, they start pushing that line about, oh, if your parents is whooping your ass at home, you can call this number and snitch. And you remember people was telling on their parents and shit like that?
Right, right.
But where they missed the mark at with that shit, you had people that was really at home getting abused and shit that couldn't get no fucking help. But you got this one motherfucker that'd call the police every night when he getting his ass whooped for fucking up. And they coming over there jumping on them parents and shit like that. if the shit really got construed, man, to the fact that where these kids think motherfuckers are supposed to be their friends. When you a parent, you're not put on this earth to be a fucking friend.
How do why do they think like that? Because you got some parents that get high with their kids, that come on, let's have a drink. Roll that blunt. Let's go.
They doing it with the kids
over here. Those are the things that you don't do with your kids, man.
Exactly.
You don't smoke no motherfucking marijuana with your child. Because at the end of the day, he's getting comfortable with hanging with you, not you being my parent, my father.
So what you just said is a part of staying on code. We know as parents, that's something that you shouldn't do with your kids. You got to stay on code. You got to stay in parent mode. You don't go from being parent to being their friend or right. being somebody that's passing blunts between them. You know, right. you just don't do that, man.
Yeah, you don't. My thing is this. Because, you know, right now, marijuana, we gonna go to the weed a little bit. Marijuana is legal now. I smoke weed. Every once in a while, I smoke me some weed. But I'd be damned if I'm gonna sit up and get high with one of my damn kids.
It's a no-no.
And that's just no-no. You don't cross a line. It's like, it's this. When you're making love with your wife, you ain't invite them in the room, son. Watch and see how I hit that ass. You might as well if you start doing shit like that.
Right.
Well, it just at the end of the day, man, when you start doing shit like that, entertaining yourself with your kids in a fashion of that nature, what happens when your son get mad at you? Now you see these niggas just nutting up on their daddies.
And that's because they've crossed that line at some point.
You got this in the neighborhood today. But it's all, to me, I think everything that we do in life is designed. Everything that we do in life has a reason to it. It has a purpose. When the government, when these people took whooping our kids mm-hmm. out of the household, and now the kid feel more just angry because now I can call the police and your ass and go to jail. If whooping your kids and you put your kids in juvenile hall system, you got to pay for it. What that tell you, man? If I can't chastise my son, what happens? My son get more and more badder and badder every day. He goes out there hanging out. Now he becomes a statistic. Now he done got his ass whooped by the police or killed by the police.
After that law was implemented, surely around by the late 90s, early 2000s, when you start seeing these kids walking up in the school and gunning down the whole classroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because that was the parents had, they had, there was no longer no structure within the home. You couldn't discipline your child when you know Johnny was doing all this. When Johnny was back there killing the cat, killing the dog, and doing all this crazy, strange stuff, you weren't able to stop him and discipline him on that. You know what I mean? Right. So you just kind of shoved it under the carpet, buried the animal, and just pretend like that never happened. So over a period of time, he evolved. And the mentality became thirsty for something bigger or something, a bigger venue, shopping for a bigger venue. And here we go. Now we got these kids walking up to school, movie theaters, nightclubs or whatever, what have you. And they just gun everybody down. Don't even know them. Just walk up into the church, Dale and Roof. You know what I mean? Then the police shows up and apprehend him. Don't fire a shot. Take him to Burger King and buy him a Whopper. And cart him off to jail like it was just a normal day for him. That's not normal.
And Manny Man, what do you call a kid that can go and commit a murder, but then fall out and break down in the courtroom after the judge then gave him a life sentence, crying? What do you call him? Is he misunderstood? No, he's not misunderstood because he just killed somebody.
Right.
He don't understand consequences. We didn't understand that part. We didn't give a fuck about that part, should I say. We went to jail back then. We went to jail. We didn't give a fuck. 72 hours, you getting out of jail, don't nobody show up. Ain't nobody coming to court. Motherfuckers looked for that type of shit. And we counted on that. Now these little niggas is getting 35, 45 to life. And then the majority of these cats you see today just sitting in that courtroom crying. They crying. Do you feel sorry for them?
No, I don't.
We were lucky. But very these lucky. Little kids today, man, They never have to deal with consequences. You know what I'm saying? The big homies, how do we change the shit, should I say? It's hard to do because once the motherfucking mind is conditioned to play a certain part, he don't want to play another part. He don't want the other role. He don't want the role of a good guy because now he believes that all the homies is looking down on him because he thinking the right way. So the right way will never show. We'll never put on that game face. I wouldn't wear that game face because I didn't want the homies to think that I was slacking up, I was getting soft, or what have you. Because if a motherfucker think you're getting soft out there, the cold thing about it is they going to try you.
Oh, 100%. Please believe it.
What happened?
I said, please believe it.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the odds are just against all of us. And we don't pay attention. And we don't want to see that or hear that part of the story. You know, right. We want to believe all the bullshit that we hear and see, opposed to thinking and seeing what's right and wrong.
Yeah, well, you know what?
We're scared to think for ourselves.
Well, if you notice today, man, a big part of what's going on today too is men don't communicate with each other no more. This is the typical scenario nowadays. I got a problem with James. I have James' phone number. Instead of calling him, I go on Instagram and make a post about it. But don't never say his name, but he know I'm talking about him. Well, you know, this and that. Instead of me picking up the phone and calling him, I do that. And you know, no offense to our women listeners out there or my fellas, but to me, that's really feminine. That's not the way a man conduct himself. If you got a problem with somebody, you call that person and you work it out with them. Even if you get on the backyard and box.
Communication is the main component of getting an understanding. Without communication, you can't have an understanding. So that's just something that just has to happen, you know?
Right. Yeah, it has to happen 100% for sure, because I know y'all see it online. It's like, and I'm not going to go into the whole Charlemagne thing, right? They was reporting on a brother. What's the guy's name? Kwame Brown. Charlemagne, you know, he went a little bit extra with it and said some stuff about the thing. The dude went hammers, went bunkers. Charlemagne went on this show and apologized today.
That's a man.
I think that's a man shit right there. He said, you know what? I fucked up. I shouldn't have said that and this and that. He apologized about it. A lot of niggas today won't do that. A lot of niggas will know they wrong as a motherfucking $3 bill, but it still could carry on with the bullshit instead of just being a man and saying, you know what? My bad, my nigga. I don't mean no disrespect.
At least he had the common decency to recognize his mistake and understand why he needed to apologize. You understand? Because here's the thing, man. If you think about the NBA, right? Mm-hmm. Well, look at the world. There's over 7 billion people on this planet, right? Maybe 500 professional basketball players. With those percentages, the likelihood of anybody making to the NBA is slim and none. So if Stephen A. Smith and Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes and Gilbert Arenas is jumping on this dude because they don't feel like he didn't play to their understanding or what they think he should have played to, that's their problem. You understand? For them to still be talking about that 20 years later is retarded, man. They didn't have nothing else better to talk about.
Yeah, that's real shit. You know, one thing that we got to stop doing, though, and I'm going to tell you one thing, and I try to practice this myself, is we got to stop trying to knock the next brother down that's doing some shit all the damn time.
Exactly.
It's always us. Whenever you see somebody talking about a nigga, it ain't a white boy on TV. It ain't this person. It ain't a Mexican doing it. It's one of us. Oh, fuck them niggas. They think they got it going on. I'm about to tear them down. Their favorite word is I'm going to expose some shit. What the fuck you going to expose? You lame?
No, that's we hate what we see, what we can't get for ourselves. So we hate the next man that got it. We hate the fact that he got it and I don't. And you see a lot of motherfuckers like that. Mel would tell you way back in the days, a nigga hated another motherfucker because his lowrider looked better than his. I didn't have Dayton's. So now niggas say, the only way I can get those Dayton's is to go out there and kill a motherfucker for them. No, Dayton's was easy to get. Everybody had a hustle and a grind, but motherfuckers didn't want to buy them. We hate on each other just because of what we see.
Right.
What we don't have right here. We hate each other because bitches is looking at that nigga saying that motherfucker is with it. That nigga pretty. Now, I hate this nigga because the bitches like him. Exactly. We hate each other just on the strength of niggerism or whatever.
Hey, man, you know what? Niggerism. You mentioned that. People hated bartending for that very reason. Bartending was a nice looking young man, and all the women, no matter where they was from, loved that dude. Dudes from even his own section or dudes from obviously other sections hated him just for that reason alone. You know,
exactly. Didn't want their women around that motherfucker, know nothing. But what I'm saying is we hate what we're not.
Right.
We hate what we can't be, but we see it in somebody else. As a black man, we hate the fact that another motherfucker made it. We hate the fact that a black man accomplished something, or niggas came from the hood and they doing this now. Oh, he think he the shit. He made it out the hood.
No, but look, watch this, man, though.
For making it. It ain't watch every day this. Somebody walk out the neighborhood. You know what I'm saying, Mel?
Yeah. Watch this, James. There's a guy, his name is Napoleon Hill. Napoleon Hill said one of the most powerful emotions that a man has is a desire to have sex. But if he harnessed that energy and transmuted it into a monetary equivalent, he'd be that much further ahead in life. In other words, what he was explaining is that if you put your time and energy into building your foundation in your life, you don't have no time for all that stuff. And then at that point, you don't have to look for no woman. The woman going to be looking for you. You understand? Because now you don't build this life up and you got it. You got it stable. Now, you know what I mean? But what happened to our youth or some of the people that come up at the time, they put the buggy in front of the horse. They start chasing women and doing all this stuff and don't realize that they're losing precious time because they could spend that time building their life. And once you have your life together, then women come. They come find you. You don't have to look for them.
Right.
That's some real shit right there. That's some real shit. But you know what, though, man? And I know James ain't big on conspiracies. Me and you are a little bit, Mel. If you look at this, man, now let's take it back. If you go back and look at the programming that was on TV in the 70s and the 80s, right?
Uh-huh.
It was always a play kind of to where the dad was, the house was a buffoon, almost like a fool. The kids playing jokes on them and stuff. The mama talking to them crazy. You had good times where Thelma was talking to the house, coming that man to his house and talk crazy to him or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Or you had the Jeffersons to where the woman come over to his house and talk crazy to him. You feel what I'm saying?
Right. Right.
They had the sister with the white guy. It was all kind of little subliminal shit, and they always made the man look like a damn fool.
Well, that was the beginning of the feminist movement. That was because of the feminists that started all that stuff. It was a sleight of a hand and subliminal course, but it was due to that feminist movement that they felt like women was equal to men. But women got to realize that you're living in the world that men built. See, because a woman can't run the electrical grid or run the upkeep the infrastructure of this country. That's not women. We're doing the job already. Women have to learn how to do that. You understand? So you took all the men away. What would the women do?
Yes, that and women to our women fans out there, them is Melly Mel saying that y'all better stay in your place.
Hey,
I want y'all sending me no emails.
I said that. I stand in that.
That's me out there. That. You know, but the thing is though, bro, if you go back and look at it, the man was always made to look like a fool. It's like if you think about it, Married with Children, that was one of the biggest shows on TV. Al Bundy was a shoe salesman, right? He had a job. But it always showed him just like he was just a fool all the time. Could never be anything right.
Okay, we still dealing with the feminist movement, though. Still, it's all a part of it. You know what I'm saying? Nothing is exempt from that. We just got to understand why, the whys. You understand?
Now, both of y'all, you know, whether they was good men or not, you know, we all had men in our household, right? We all had men in our black household. Would any of y'all daddies or stepdaddies and let some broad come in the house and talk to him crazy?
Hell no.
It wouldn't have went down in my house. Because the first thing Willie would have said, my step-pops, whose last name I carry, he'd have told my mama, you better put this bitch in check. You know what I'm saying? Or I'm a Hamlet. You know what I mean? She ain't going to be in here talking crazy to me or talking to me any kind of way. I remember a woman told my stepdaddy, you need to put some shoes on. He said, when you start paying some bills around this motherfucker, bitch, then you can talk to me. Until then, you ain't got to say shit to me. And I said, damn. I thought it was kind of harsh at the time, but what he was doing is he was putting the check down.
So what about daddy overflowing his ass and then my mama shot my father? Nigga, you ain't putting your hands on me no more. You ain't talking to me like that no more. So the motherfucker thought he was going to go out, fuck with his bitches at the motorcycle club, and come back in the house, and that's that. She set her motherfucking ass in a chair with a towel on her lap, the pistol up under the towel. When that nigga opened the door, pop, pop, pop. I thought that was the most gangsterish shit I ever seen. In my
but you know what, though? That's what she should have done.
My mom with the business, you feel me?
And I'm with all that thing because I'm going to tell you this.
Hey, he got it together, though, James.
I'm going to tell you this, though. That's a pet peeve of mine because my thing is this. It ain't no way on God's green earth no nigga got no reason to be putting no hands on a female. I tell everybody this. If she making you want to whoop her ass and all that, she ain't the right one.
That's true.
She ain't the right one because I'm going to tell you, a woman, the day a woman want me to fight with her ass, if my wife liked to fight and all that shit, we wouldn't be together. I'm not doing it, dog.
Well, some women like that. Some women like to fight. My uncle's girl, she was at the projects.
She Which projects?
Imperial Courts.
Huh? Imperial Courts.
Yeah.
Imperial Courts.
Imperial Courts. I watched her throw down with my Uncle Polo, like on some 100, nigga come get it. And he was busting her ass up, but she was with the business. You got some women out there that ain't going to take that nigga shit.
They ain't going for it at all.
Who wants to, man, let me tell you something. I don't need a woman if three niggas trying to jump me and she just stand there hollering and hooping. Bitch, you better join in. If she
better get the fight. You better get the fight, man.
I don't need her fuck ass. I don't need it. But also, I don't want my girl.
I ain't fighting. We fighting.
Right. Every woman I had in my life, man, was with the business. My ex-wife on the motorcycle said, I had to tell her, put your motherfucking gun back in your titty. I don't have to fight every time a nigga run his mouth. She coming out. She whipping that motherfucking deuce five out, ready to pop a nigga. My daughter's mama from Southside. Pam like, nigga, if you gonna fight my nigga, you gotta fight me too. I have women that was ready to fight what they do. That don't make her a bad woman because
oh, no, ready. Not at all.
I mean, my oldest son mama, old light-skinned motherfucker, pretty ass motherfucker, but she ready to fight. She love her dude. Nigga, y'all ain't finna do that. Feel me? My sisters.
James, you had some savages.
At the J.J. Newberry's with the Pominos or at Sears. Sisters was swabbing too.
Hey, James, whatever happened to Modessa?
Against a woman.
You remember Modessa, James?
Huh?
You remember Modessa?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that was my love right there, man.
Right. Here's the difference between a man fighting. We got a lot of men out there that let another nigga call him a bitch or slap him up or push him and kick him around. But then he take that aggression and being because he mad, he gonna go home and call his woman a bitch. No, if you ain't man enough to fight another man for disrespecting you, you shouldn't say shit to your woman for disrespecting you. That's the problem here. You got a lot of men that'll beat the shit out of a woman, but they're afraid of the big homie, the little homie, or just a man in general. That's the problem with motherfuckers. They need to learn their roles. If you're a motherfucking man and you out there with the next man and that man call you a bitch, handle your business. But if your wife don't cook or your girl don't cook dinner, had dinner for you, Now you want to roar up and be mad. Oh, bitch, you shouldn't know. There's a difference. Some niggas is bitches too, and niggas don't understand that shit. And I'm going to keep it 100. There's a whole lot of bitch niggas out here. A whole lot of them. And the difference of that, you got some niggas out here that'll fight any nigga on the planet, but he'll still go home and beat up his bro. Can you be mad at that nigga? You can't put him in the same boat as a bitch nigga, but you can be, nigga, you ain't got to beat your girl up like that.
True.
Because at that point, you ain't got to prove a motherfucking thing to your woman.
True.
You your woman's supposed to feel safe around you, secure.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what men are. Men are the maintainers and protectors of women and children. That's just our position. That's our natural position.
Right. That's supposed to be our strength, but we don't do that. We don't do that. We done let that shit go so far, it's just out of hand. So how do we get that shit back? We got to learn to condition ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It took me to get to my late 40s, my 50s, for me to understand what type of person I wanted to be. Or now I can honestly stand up and tell the next motherfucker, I'm a man. I know I'm a man. I know what a man is now. I done been through it. But I know what the fuck a man is, and can't nobody take that from me. Can't nobody touch that.
Right.
And I'm going to protect any and everything that's in my circle. And that's family. You feel me? So
absolutely.
If we understand and learn that part, then I think we'd be better as black men. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm going to tell you, I had one of the coaches, as y'all know, my son played football for USC. And one of the coaches that told me and my wife that y'all are the best parents I ever seen. Y'all really be there for y'all kids, right? My thing is this. I reward my kids when they're doing something excellent. When they're doing something that's not excellent, they don't get rewarded for the stuff, right? I look at it like this. We paid for our oldest son to go to college. We didn't have to pay for my middle son to go to school because he did what he's supposed to do with his grades and football. And got himself in the school. He rewarded that. We got him a car, right? My oldest son did right. He went and got him some shit. My daughter, she on her way, so she could get her some stuff. If they was in here fucking up, it wouldn't happen like that. But even with that being said, I always let my kids know that you're not obligated to shit for you doing what you're supposed to do. I'm doing this because as a reward for you. But this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to want to be good for yourself in life. You feel what I'm saying?
But at a certain point, you're doing it because you're a parent. And this is what parents do. They make their kids great. Your sons want to be like dad because dad is doing right. Dad is still here with my mama. So I want to be like him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's let's all take about it, image.
Let's take it a little deeper. So why is it that Alonzo Ball get criticized for doing such an excellent job with his three sons, but yet the media is owning
because like he's a black man.
That's what I was going to say. You know what the problem with Alonzo, you know what the problem with the media they got with him is that he's a black man that breaks every stereotype they ever had. This motherfucker loves his sons to death. And regardless of what you want to say, because I'm trying to get one to the NFL, this nigga don't got all his kids, the one kid. At least he don't got in the big deep. What he got in the C League or whatever? He's still playing professional basketball.
I don't want to blame it on white people, but I want to say this: people do not want to see black men with strength and power like that. That raise their kids and let the whole world know that I got their back. My kids are good. Mm-hmm. My kids ain't bad, and they're there. If every father, if the world seen every black man as a father out there for their kids like that, we wouldn't have the problems we have today.
I'm telling you for real.
He opened his mouth. Oh, no, we don't need niggas to act like that. We don't need them out in the public like that.
So this is why it's so important that we control our own media, because if we control our own media, we get to put the images out there that is respectful, that show black men doing these type of things and it don't be in the hands of individuals that don't have our best interest, because it's still the Willie Lynch syndrome going on, because they want to put out people that's not so doing so well are doing good in society, but they don't want to highlight and showcase the Lonzo Balls, the Steals, the James, and the Melly Mills. They don't want to do that because then now they got to change the subject. The topic has got to change the way how we are being defined in this society. So that's why it's important that we stay on code and we gain access to our own, controlling our own media. That's why when I'm doing the Hood Post, man, I always say I take individuals that turn negatives into positives. That's what I'm interested in.
Exactly, and that's some real shit. So, Lonzo Ball, we need you on the show, big dog. I'm going to get at your people.
There you go, man. Let him come speak that truth, man.
Because we're going to get you on here, bro, and give you your flowers. We ain't going to get you on here to talk about that because that man is a great father and he's a great husband. I'm going to tell you, I'll fuck with that little show. That man's wife had a stroke. He take care of that woman, built her a little park in the backyard. He take care of them kids, and he love his kids, dog. What's wrong with that?
If he hadn't took care of her, she'd be dead based on how the medical people treat our people when they go in the hospital. She'd be dead by now, depending on them people.
Right.
Exactly.
That man took that circumstance and that situation to his own hand and said, I'm going to go get these herbs. I'm going to go get these alternative medicines. Wherever they're at, I'm going to get my wife. I'm going to take care of my wife. No worries. I don't need y'all help. Let me take care of this.
Because you know what I told somebody, and see, this is what I mean. That's why I get me so pissed off when I see us attacking each other. As soon as the man had put his sons all had their own clothing brands. He made their own tennis shoe. The first thing you see niggas, oh, them shoes ugly. They're too expensive. Oh, man, ain't nobody gonna wear those. It's like, man, why don't you just support? If you don't want to buy them, don't go buy them. But don't try to stop everybody else from supporting the brother if they want to do some shit. And that's the biggest problem with us, dog. We are our own biggest haters.
Another black man, it didn't look like, man, I shouldn't have bought shit. But we support, well, I don't buy them. Motherfuckers buy Michael Jordans. Motherfuckers buy tennis shoes because they want to look like that. They got tennis shoes out there $500-$600 today. I wish I would. I wouldn't give a fuck what I had. I wish I would.
You ain't but doing that, you,
but check this out though, y'all. I'm gonna tell you what motherfuckers will do. What's his name and them Gucci and them could call us niggas behind our back and could do all this shit. Depict the black people with the watermelon and the big lips and all that shit. They could do that shit. It could come out today that Gucci hate black people. Them motherfuckers still go sell $1 billion worth of shit to black people. Because guess what? These punk ass rappers gonna still go out and wear the shit. These entertainers gonna still go out and wear the shit. So therefore them kids will go out and wear it because they don't give a fuck at the end of the day. At the end of the day, niggas hate niggas, dog. I really believe that. All right, James, say what you was gonna say.
I said it ain't that. It's we don't understand how much power we have in our neighborhoods, in our community. A liquor store couldn't stand there, couldn't stay open if we didn't go in that motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? We got motherfuckers in liquor stores coming out and pointing guns at you. Get the fuck out of my store or away from the parking lot. This is part of our neighborhood, but we support the motherfuckers still. And you see a nigga walk right past you after they talking all that shit and don't want to serve you nothing, but we're still walking that motherfucking store and by.
That's some real shit.
That bullshit is on us. We got to see how much power we have. Now, y'all won't be here if we didn't fuck with y'all. So let's not fuck with them. Let's get them out of there because they ain't bringing that money back to the neighborhood and helping with a school or a park and no shit like that. They taking that shit back home or back to their country.
Yeah, that's some real shit.
Everybody
you know,
helps everybody but us. We don't help each other. We don't help us.
Hey, you know what I do want to do? And I want to be an example of that, man. On another note, this kid that reached out to, I think he reached out to all of us on Instagram, right? This kid is 12 years old and has his own clothing brand. It's the Resign 24.
Uh-huh.
Did they sent you some stuff, James?
No.
Yeah, they going to be sending you, check your inbox on your thing. He got a clothing brand, Resign 24. We go post some pictures of the stuff on our Instagram page and stuff like that. But he sent us all individually a package. And I'm hook you up because the mama been trying to get extra, James. But This kid is 12 years old, man, and designed this stuff. The mama asked me, would you support it? I know this ain't the perfect thing of it, but he got some dope stuff, man. 12 years old, got a clothing brand. How would I look like as a, how would I look as a brother, an older brother that's preached black excellence to deny him of that? You know, to expose him to people in our platform and stuff like that. Man, I thought that was incredible. So shout out to Rasan, man. Y'all go check his page out and everything. But
what is it?
At Nasir Womack. That's his Instagram page. N-A-S-E-E-R Womack. And I just thought that was real. Like, I thought that was incredible, man. I said, this dude 12 years old and got his own clothing brand. And I
actually got Nasir Womack.
Yeah, Nasir Womack. He's an actor. He's a young kid from Long Beach, man. Out there doing his thing, man. Shout out to him, man. We appreciate you, little brother. Keep going strong. You know, but if we start supporting our own, man, like, and I keep telling people, and I don't say it a couple of episodes, and hopefully we can do it one day. If every black man, woman, and child in this country decided for 2 days we're not going to spend no money with nobody else, if we go to the grocery store, hell, go to Noticias 24, go to the Mexican store, you know what I mean?
Right.
But we're not going to no Walmart. We're not spending no money, no Target, no McDonald's. I'm going to tell you, this motherfucker would be shut down. They would have to bow down to us, but we're not going to ever be able to do it because it's always going to be a motherfucker saying, oh, I don't give a fuck about that shit them niggas talking about over there. I'm going to go get my coffee. Or I'm going to go over here and get this.
I got another question still for you and James. And hopefully you guys can talk about it or at least give us some insight on it. What do you think about these rappers that claim neighborhoods, they claim tribes in Compton, L.A., and Watts? What's your take on that?
You know what, man? You want to go first, James?
No, go ahead.
This is what I think about it, man. I think brothers need to be true to who they are because the real Crips and Bloods I know that are rappers, they may mention it here in their songs, but it ain't their whole thing. It ain't their whole, you feel what I'm saying? They don't go overboard with it. You feel what I'm saying? I know one of the biggest Blood execs in the game, man, and I swear I've never heard this dude say Blood one time. I ain't never heard James say Blood before. So the real
that's not what I'm talking. I'm talking about the dudes that grew up in these suburban homes, that grew up in upper middle class suburbia, never knew anything about a gang, but somehow got on, made a big hit record in rap, and then they decide, well, I'm gonna go to Compton, and I'm gonna go claim Mob, or I'm gonna go claim Santana, I'm gonna go claim Fruit Town. I'm talking about those individuals.
A lot of those guys, they sit back, listen to Yo MTV raps, and then just like this, they figured out they have a talent. They know how to rap. But with the talent going out there and trying to get a record deal, get sound or heard, motherfuckers realize they need a image. They need to, the image that you see with most gangster rappers, they feel that they need that. So they reach out to the gangsters. Let's say, you know, a certain individual knew that he didn't have it in him to pull it off and do this, so I needed real gangsters. I needed these motherfuckers to make my dream come true. You know, rap, whether he didn't rap or whatever, he knew that he had to have that image. And a lot of these cats coming from Beverly Hills, these white boys want to be rappers, they know that they need an image. They need to go to a hood. That's the only way they can pull it off. And the money played a big part of that because a lot of the guys in the hood don't have a way out already. So why shouldn't I let this motherfucker slide in and play that part? He's paying for it.
That's what my point is, that's fine, but we need to get a non-disclosure agreement from you. So we don't get Tekashi 6ix9ine by you if you decide to go the other way, because we need to be compensated in a way that fits this tribe situation. You know what I mean? Because you want to make all this money, but then you want to run away from the circumstance after you created it.
Self-destruction is already in the hood. We already got our finger on the self-destruction button. To be a hood and to be certified in the hood, we should never allow motherfuckers to come in our motherfucking neighborhoods and perpetrate anything. A rapper, an actor, or whomever. If you ain't coming to my hood to say, I think you got talent, let me put you in a movie. Fuck having niggas come and say, I want to be from your hood. I'm gonna, he go 30,000, they go 10,000. I want to be from the hood. What he do out there represents everybody in that hood. Just like it's 6ix9ine, Tekashi.
Right.
Everything that that dude did, the homies opened the door for that shit, and then now they allow it because the money has blinded us. Now it ain't no hood shit no more. Now niggas is on survival mode. Now niggas are doing 15 to 20 in prison because of the consequences, because we allow people to infiltrate what we are and perpetrate what we are, and they're not. So it ain't 6ix9ine motherfucking fault. It ain't Suge Knight fault. It ain't none of these other guys that in the hood trying to be from the hood. They don't want to be from the hood. They just need the hood to get big.
Right.
So they're using the hood for a purpose.
Uh-huh.
And that's all it is. If a motherfucker ain't broke bread in the hood, ain't spilled no blood in the hood, you could never be a hood nigga.
Period.
You could never be. I don't give a fuck what you do or how much money you got. Because it's not here. It's not here. You don't even know how to think like a motherfucking gangster. You can perpetrate a fraud all day. Because them niggas ain't looking, because they already got their blindfolds on because they getting paid.
So when the shit get real, then that's when you see the real that was really in them, that was something foreign and alien to what you had.
Survival mode is a motherfucker. Anybody that feel threatened and see that the shit is coming, they're going to either crawl up, they're going to ball up, roll up, or they're going to try to get the fuck out of there, or they're going to give it up. Survival mode is a motherfucker, and it comes in all shapes, sizes, forms, the whole nine. If you ain't self-made, if gangster by nature, not by choice, if you don't understand what you are and where you going with what you doing, you ain't shit. You ain't shit. You just walking in a motherfucking in a dead alley. One way to go, one way out. Now, when you get to the end and then have to come back, what you gonna do? Because you know these motherfuckers at the end of this motherfucker waiting for you. You ain't
so they don't anticipate that the niggas that they rolling with got tombstone mindsets and graveyard dispositions for real.
Yeah,
not so, playing for real.
So every situation, the two motherfuckers that they sought out and they look for to get to help them get to where they want or help them build their repertoire, whatever the case might be, them the two motherfuckers in the hood thinking we hood slick, we finna talk this nigga out this paper, we finna get this money, yada yada. And at the end of the day, everybody that tried to do that, it backfired on their ass.
Yep.
It backfired on it because, number one,
talk that real, James. Talk that real, man. Talk that real.
Give you motherfuckers what I think I should give you. That was one of our downfalls. We got what he thought we deserved or what we was going to get. It was never intended for us to get rich or out the hood. It was only intended for us to come and school him on what he wanted to be and what he wanted people to see.
Exactly. Well explained, brother. Well explained.
Yeah, so that's what that is. And you know, I just think that if you're from the hood, man, there's certain rules that you just don't allow. You don't allow anybody to come in the hood because it's a disrespect to every homie that died on the block.
Right.
Or in prison. To let him come in, infiltrate, or portray to be a thug nigga, and we know he not.
Right. Talk that Santana. Shit, James. Talk that and shit, man.
And talk about, nigga, this Santana. Nigga, you from Milwaukee? You ain't never been in the hood. You ain't never broke bread. How can you claim this? How can you put that on your body? That's not for you. And that's a disrespect to every homie that's walking and living. Every nigga that even thought about being a Crip or a motherfucking blood should be mad at that shit. We live our life. We wake up, put on our drawers. Some niggas won't even wear blue underwear because they so blooded out. Some niggas won't even put on a red t-shirt or use red toothpaste because they so cripped out and loped out. But you'll let a light-skinned version of Michael Jackson come in this motherfucker and say, let's beat it and let's twerk. And now you done dyed your motherfucking hair. Now you done played this nigga game. And now you, man, let me not get started, man. It ain't working.
And man, on that note, man, that's a perfect way, man, to end this, man. Melly Mel, man, we appreciate you coming in, man, and sit with us, man.
No, I appreciate it, man. Let me get info out there, man.
For sure, I'm gonna ask
you. Yeah, Professor Melly Mel, the Hood Post Man. Go follow me on YouTube, Instagram, the Hood Post Man on Twitter, the Hood Post Man, and I'm Melly Gibson on Facebook, man. Be sure to follow me, man. We gonna get this thing popping, man. We gonna get it together, cause Big Steel, James, MCA. Man, they stay on cold, man. Gangsta right. Chronicles.
Right.
For sure. We appreciate you, man. We got to, James, you know, I know it's a little delay, and you was about to say something. What was you going to say, big dog?
No, I was just saying, man, everybody got to hear Melly Mel. When I first heard you, I was like, this motherfucker, he got some hood knowledge. He understand. And not for the people on the outside, but the people on the inside in the hood, Mel. These cats need to hear that voice. These cats need to hear that knowledge of what the hood is.
I appreciate that, James.
Man, they need to get it, because a lot of cats is walking with their pants halfway off their ass and don't even know why they're doing it. These niggas ain't taught shit, ain't learned shit. And that's why gangbanging is fucked up today, because they don't got and they can't absorb the knowledge that you putting out there. They don't understand this shit. And I tell each and everybody, man, don't wait till you're 57 years old to say I give. Man, I gave a long time ago, but I didn't know how to throw my hands up and surrender, my brothers. But now I know. And if it is what it is. On that, man, I appreciate both of you brothers, man. I'm about to
go to work there.
It's the Gangster Chronicles with James McDonald, Steel, and MC8.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight we have a special guest in here. He's the former CEO of No Limit Records, Mr. Tobin Costin. How you doing tonight, Tobin?
Hey, how you doing, Norm? It's good to see you still. Thanks for having me on the show, man. I mean, I've been waiting. You got all the hottest people on the show. So I was like, man, the fact you reached out to me to be on it, I'm blessed and I appreciate that.
Oh, for sure, man. We glad to have you on the show, man, because, you know, and looking at the No Limit Chronicles like everybody else in the country at the time when it came out, I think like everybody else in the country at the time, I was, you know, banging No Limit back in the day, just like everybody else.
Yes.
How did you initially hook up with Pete? What was your background? Like, how did you guys like connect?
Well, you know, I was in college radio spinning records, and I actually was doing a show, and this is about 92. And my god brother used to work at the Foot Locker. He was the manager at the Foot Locker. So Pete used to go in there all the time and buy tennis shoes. So I was trying to do a show and I had a rapper bail out on me at the last minute. And I just happened to be talking to my god brother. And he was like, man, I got this cat, Master P. I know he'll show up and do a show for you. And I hadn't, you know, I didn't know who he was. I didn't know anything about him other than I just needed a rapper to do a show. And he came out. I had a couple of dollars, put a couple of dollars in his pocket. But he came out. He had some T-shirts and did a cool show. And then we met each other and kind of just hit it off. So we just kind of kept in contact during that time. And he would send me stuff and I'd promote and play, you know, play music on the radio and that kind of stuff. He'd have to send me these cassette tapes and I'd play these cassette tapes and I'd do some giveaway stuff. And that's how we kind of built the relationship. And it wasn't until 1993 is when I kind of came on board and just really started working for No Limit in a variety of capacity. And then at that time in 1993, I had already known St. Charles, who's E-40's uncle, was always sending me promotional stuff for me to promote. And I was promoting 40 and the Click and all those guys. And actually, St. Charles was the one who had told Pete, man, you really need to get Tobin to run the label and be your manager because you really need to show that kind of professional business side. And at that point, P just said, yeah, you know, let's do this. Because I had already cultivated a good relationship. I had all these ideas about marketing and different strategy and how to get more positioning in retail and really how to try to sell records without necessarily having that radio play and going through college radio and kind of building that buzz and building that name. And then at that time, when St. Charles reached out to and St. Charles was talking to P, man, you really need to get with Tobin. P is the one that said, okay, you're going to run the label. You're going to be my manager, business and personal manager. And that's kind of how things kind of took off from there. Because if you look at how No Limit was structured prior to that point of me coming on board, P put out probably about 17 different projects that no one was really checking for. And then when we got together and we did The Ghetto's Trying to Kill Me, and then we put together the West Coast Bad Boys. That's when things started to take off from there.
Now, let me ask you this. So what do you think it was that wasn't resonating with the people about P's music at first?
Well, I think it was, you got to understand that P quite didn't have his own sound. If you listen to all the old stuff prior to The Ghetto's Trying to Kill Me, production was okay, but it wasn't really at that professional level. So when people would listen to it, they were kind of like, well, they would listen to it, but they weren't really like, okay, I got to buy this record. And I think what happened was when we started to work with folks like, you know, Al Eaton and Ken Franklin and really start developing that West Coast sound, that's when people wanted to listen to more of what P was doing, like EA Ski and his production. That's when people started really like, okay, this is, we've taken our production game to another level. And then people wanted to hear what P was doing.
Because he sure seemed like he came out of nowhere. So he had 17 full length albums out before that. And I do remember.
Well, they weren't full length, but they were singles, EPs, albums, all kinds of projects he was doing prior to. So like anyone who watches the No Limit Chronicles will see, it started off from a retail store and it was doing shows and opening up for people and doing promotion. And it took a while. It was years. So if you think about 1988, 89, when No Limit started, to 92, when I kind of came on board, to 93, when we started to get regional success. And by the time we came out in 94 with the West Coast Bad Boys, that's what put P on the map nationally. So even though it was a West Coast record, people from the Midwest and part of the South started to want to check out this West Coast Bad Boy sound and what we were doing.
Mm. So let me ask you this. When did you guys first realize that you was on to something?
I think when we did it, I think, you know, P always had belief in himself and what he was doing. I think what we realized when we had something special is when we did the Ghettos Trying to Kill Me. So if you look at the Ghettos Trying to Kill Me album, it was P in bed with this woman. It was King George was in the back with a gun kind of portraying the ghetto. And when people saw that concept of the Ghettos Trying to Kill Me, and we did this record called 211, talk about robbing liquor stores, that's when we started to see we had something. And then what happened was there was this guy that was going around robbing liquor stores and he was robbing people at ATMs. And when he got arrested, he had told people that the Master P record 211 is what made him go out and rob these people. Because every time he listened to the record, before he robbed people, he would go listen to the record, or he had a record in tape deck, and he was listening to it before he robbed people. So then at that point is when folks started to really know who we were, and we started to kind of build that name. So that was really, you know, when we knew, like, wow, we have something. When we were affecting people and their whole thought process and what they're doing, and we started to be in the newspaper and on television, and that's when we knew, okay, we could really make something big out of it.
Okay, so, and P also, he started to kind of form his own identity.
Absolutely. At that point, he started to realize, you know, because before that, he was kind of taking a little bit of sound from this artist and that artist and wasn't sure which direction to go. But by the time we did by the time we went through that process and did that record, The Ghetto's Trying to Kill Me, and then we started to put things together for the West Coast Bad Boys, that's when ultimately we knew we had something and things were starting to move. And by the time we put that West Coast Bad Boys record out and it hit Billboard charts and it was on for consecutive weeks, and then next you know it, everyone's calling us and wanting to do something with this because we were selling a lot of records, but we were on the Billboard charts. That's when folks started to kind of just say, okay, Master P is doing something different. And what we're doing at No Limit is special.
What made you guys go in a direction? Because I noticed on West Coast Bad Boys and stuff, you guys were working with a lot of different producers, mostly Bay Area producers. When was it decided? When do you think it was decided that they would go the route and bring in like a Beats by the Pound? Like who decided that?
Well, I think it was more about having a home base. So if you look at Master P would sell records up in the Northwest and in Seattle and Portland and that area, in the Midwest. So you talk about Kansas City, Missouri, Iowa. We were selling records there, parts in the South and parts in the West Coast. And to make sure we had a home base, because if you think about it, most popular rappers, they have a home base, whether they're from parts of New York or they're from Louisiana, they're from Texas, wherever, they have a home base. And at that point, P was kind of an outsider because he wasn't, you know, he didn't sound like a West Coast rapper because he had this real Southern accent. And he really, you know, even though he spent time in Richmond and in the Bay Area, he represented the Bay Area with the West Coast Bad Boys, but people didn't really, you know P as being a California guy, because all the California folks were like, oh, you're not from out here, you country. So going back South was I think what ultimately what we decided to do, and even bringing on Beast by the Pound, that had to do with Mr. Stervon and his relationship with KLC, and then also Moby Dick being P's cousin, and then building a relationship with Mia X. We knew we had to have that Southern sound. But the reason why we went to the South was to build that home base. And then just to be frank, a dollar went a lot further in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Tennessee than it did in California. Like, I could spend $5,000 in California, and that's not going to get you as much as if you spend $5,000 in Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi, or Alabama. So from a financial standpoint, we had more to work with from a budgetary standpoint in the South. P was from the South, so he wanted to go home. We spent a lot of time down there. His relationship with Mia X, Stervon, KLC, Moby Dick, it just made sense that we do something with the South, and the South had that really deep bass, that sound that we were looking for.
At that time, man, you know, him coming from the Bay Area, like you said, he sounded like a Louisiana cat. So I'm pretty sure it was some kind of resistance up there. Did he get a lot of hate in the Bay?
Yeah, I would say not from the fans, but some of the artists had a problem that P came on the scene. So think about this. We do the West Coast Bad Boys. We take all the popular rappers on the West Coast throughout the Bay Area, and we put them on an album. We put Master P Presents on the top of that album. So everybody thought Master P was the leader of all these folks. So who do you have on there? You have folks like from Sacramento, like Sebo. You have JT the Bigger Figure. You have the Delinquents. You know, when you start thinking about these artists that are on, we had Rappin' Forte. So all of these rappers that are popular in their hoods, and Master P is presented as the leader of this crew. So at that point, we put all these records we are working on the inside of the West Coast Bad Boys. So people were like, man, P is representing the West Coast Bad Boys. And that kind of built a name for us. So I would say that there were artists out there was just like, man, who did P think he is? He's not from here. He came here and he solidified himself with the fans by being, you know, the head of the West Coast Bad Boys or leading the West Coast Bad Boys.
Oh, that's dope, man. So y'all moving units now, man. Y'all starting to sell a lot of records and everything.
Yes.
The attention from the record label's coming now, right?
Absolutely.
Who was the first one? Who was the first major to hit you guys up?
Well, Big Beat Atlantic was kind of rushing at us pretty hard. MCA was contacting us. RCA was contacting us. You know, Universal was in the mix at that particular time. But Big Beat Atlantic was probably that the label. And Craig Common was the one that was pushing so hard for Master P. And what, you know, ultimately P would have actually signed with them. And I kind of, the whole thing was P was ready to sacrifice the Master P name by getting money from Big Beat Atlantic. And the whole plan, what he wanted to do was he was going to take whatever money he was going to get from Big Beat Atlantic and put that money into Silk the Shocker and put that money into No Limit Records. And I was the person who said, we're not going to do that. It doesn't make sense. We can hold out. Because believe it or not, C Murder and King George wanted to beat me up because they was like, I was messing with their money. Because we were looking at a pretty decent sized amount of money. So what we did was we kind of rolled it out. We rolled the dice on doing the next record. So after the West Coast Bad Boys came out and we were hot, we did another record called 99 Ways to Die. So when if we wouldn't have did 99 Ways to Die, he may have signed there if I wouldn't have said, no, we're not. Let's hold on. If they were going to give us X amount of dollars, but a small percentage, if we hold on, and this is after we had met with Leroy Bobbitt, who was an entertainment attorney, and he was a partner at Loeb & Loeb, and I met him through a guy named Gary Reeves, who is executive producer of a TV show called Give TV with Blair Underwood and one of the Bush daughters. He's the one who introduced me to Mr. Bobbitt, and Mr. Bobbitt was kind of explaining what kind of deals we could get. So between him and then I had some conversations with folks like Wendy Day from the Rap Coalition. They both were kind of saying to me, like, you know, here are the different type of deals. Here's the production deal. Here's an artist deal. And I kind of just said, well, look, if we're selling all these records now independently with no distribution, or with our distribution, national distribution, but no real mechanical arm like an Atlantic Records, or no real mechanical arm like a Capitol or a Priority, just imagine if we could hold on, own our masters, and then start driving business. And all we need folks to do is just to make sure they're in the system and in the retail store. So when we turned down the Big Beat Atlantic deal, we connected with EA Ski, we started talking to Priority, and then at that particular time, we did a distribution deal with Priority to do all of our albums. So the 99 Ways to Die album was out, it was on the Billboard charts. We had success with the West Coast Bad Boys. Priority was really focused on the next album, which was the TRU True album and the Down South Hustlers. And that was really what they wanted. They wanted the True album and the Down South Hustlers. But the real thing was like the icing on the cake was the Ice Cream Man was the one that we knew was going to be a big record.
You guys have started working on the Ice Cream Man that far in advance?
Yeah, so we had already did the artwork. So one thing about when we were, the one thing we always did the artwork on the inside. So any album you saw, 9 times out of 10, those records weren't recorded yet. So what we might do is do 1 or 2 songs. We record some stuff and figure out which song's going to go on which album. So at that particular time, the Ice Cream Man wasn't done. In fact, we hadn't done one song. We had promoted the Ice Cream Man so much, and we promoted the Down South Hustlers so much that the distributors, the retail stores, were waiting on the album. Like they wanted that. They wanted that Ice Cream Man, and they wanted that Down South Hustlers. Those albums were, we were promoting those albums 1-2 years in advance, and people were kept waiting on the album. So that's really what it was. So by the time we did the distribution deal, which was an 85-15 split, 85% for us and 15% for them, they were already waiting on the True album. They were waiting on the Down South Hustlers, and they really wanted that the Ice Cream Man album.
So yeah, let me ask you this for the people that don't know out there. When he went to Priority, Big Beat Atlantic, they wanted to give him like an artist deal. So they was going to front load him with a bunch of money up front for a low percentage.
Absolutely.
When you guys took the Priority deal, I assume there was no upfront money?
No. So originally there was no advance money. It was, we're just going to do a distribution deal. What came after the fact, when they wanted to start these albums, that's when they came back and they wrote us a check. So they wrote us a check for some money. And then they really wanted the Down South Hustler album. That the question was, how much do you need to get this Down South Hustler album done? So once they gave us money for that, an advance for that, that's when the percentages went from 85-15% to 80-20. So they took 5%. They took 5% back in order to advance this money to finish the Ice Cream Man album, to record the Ice Cream Man album and the Down South Hustlers. So we pretty much did TRU album, the Down South Hustlers, the Ice Cream Man, Mia X's project. She had an EP she was doing.
The whole No Limit thing, man, is just such one of those interesting stories, because it's a feel-good story. It's the, like, rags to riches, you know, the country boy goes to the big city and strikes a rich, man.
Yes.
So y'all had an incredible thing going, but eventually it started being some dissension. Do you think things change when the money start really coming in?
I mean, I don't even know if it was just about the money. I just think what happens is, when people are concerned about, you know, I think ultimately it wasn't even about the money, because for me, I was all in on what we were doing because I believed in what we were doing. I think it was just had to do with people start to wonder, who's saying what and doing what. And there's all this talk about whose album's going to come out next and whether they want to, you know, do their own thing because their album's not coming out for several months. And we see other people being moved up. And I mean, you know, there's just that whole, you know, at the end of the day, people get frustrated by where they are and what place they are in their position. And I think that just was the dynamic of the frustration of, you know, where is my place in the label and where that goes. I think certain artists were probably frustrated financially about where money was going and where they think the money should have went. But at the end of the day, you know, it was No Limit. Master P was the CEO of No Limit. I was the executive vice president and manager and ran the label and managed him and pretty much managed the artist. It was a family affair. And like anything, when you bring money into the fold, it does kind of create this kind of dissension in the ranks. But it's also, how are we communicating when people's projects are coming out and what that looks like? And there could be some frustration around, well, wait a minute, my album's supposed to come out at this particular point. I got bills to pay. I got things to do. I'm ready to blow up. But then I might be moved down on the pecking order. And because for whatever reason, maybe it's the sound, maybe the idea or the ideas or the projects or people are asking, distributors asking or retailers are asking for specific records, and people get moved down in pecking order. It happens like that in a major label too, right? You know, my album's supposed to come out and then it gets on the shelf for several months and you don't have the right sound yet, so we're going to push you back. All of that thing is kind of how it works.
Tobin, absolutely. What are they saying,
brother? Well, you know, you can get on my website at Tobin, T-O-B-I-N, Costen, C-O-S-T-E-N.com. You can follow me on Instagram at Tobin Costen. That's probably the best way to connect with me. But if you go to my website, TobinCosten.com, people email me. You can email me on there. And I usually get back to people pretty quick via email or phone number. I would just tell people, leave your phone number because I'm good with text and calling. I'm a little bit better old school with picking up the phone, with calling people and having a conversation. I mean, that's kind of how we connected. And I try to get back.
That's more true. I don't like doing the whole Instagram thing. I get people, they don't ask for numbers anymore. What's your Instagram page? And it's like, take my phone number and call me. I don't check those messages in there. I don't check those messages like that.
Well, you know, I usually, if people get at me, I don't have it where it notifies me, so I got to log on there. But I usually tell people, if you get on my website, you reach out to me, and email me. Most people don't email me their phone number. So I just tell folks all the time, if you email me your phone number, I will text you or call you. And so we can have a conversation. And that's, you know, I try to get back to everyone. And a lot of times people will be like, whoa, you got back to me. And I did that even when I was at No Limit. It was really important for me when people sent information to me, pick up the phone and call or mail them and let them know and give them feedback. Especially when folks are giving you demo tapes. I'm always real big about, hey, if somebody sends me their demo tape, I want to make sure that I do my part and at least get back to them and give them feedback, good, bad, or indifferent. And not just leave them hanging.
Let me ask you something, because you just led me into a question. Out of those demo tapes that you got in, how much good shit did you find?
I probably would say one out of 20. So what is that, 5%? Probably 1 out of 20. I'd find something that I'm like, okay, there's something here. Sometimes you find something that's just a diamond in the rough. There were a lot of artists that we got demo tapes for when we did the Down South Hustlers that we were like, whoa, these are underground cats and they sounded good. Let's try to do something with them. So I would say probably 5% of the time, there'd be a bunch of people would send you stuff and be like, whoa. But I always got back to people, let them know what I thought, good, bad, or indifferent. Like I would always tell people, hey, you know, just keep working, keep grinding. Or I would tell people like, hey, this is not for us, but I would just encourage you to keep working. I always told people to keep working, even if I didn't like what they were doing.
So did you have, so you just said you put a couple of those cats in the Down South Hustlers.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Any of them wind up, any artists that we know from No Limit that kind of came from the whole demo tape thing?
Well, more than likely, PKO, who was on the Down South Hustlers, those guys from Texas, was on there. 20 to Life was on there. We got their tape or their demo tape. The other one was CCG, Scandal City G's from Kansas City. They were on that Down South Hustlers, and they put out a solo album that hit Billboard. So nobody really big, but there were just artists on there that we got that were talented. And we put them on and did some projects with, whether it was a compilation or we put something together or we did shows with them, you know, and that's really the key. You got a good sound. I don't care if you you know, you're recording on a four-track cassette or you're doing something digitally high-end, if you got talent, it'll show.
Yeah, that's for sure, man. I appreciate you sitting down with us tonight, bro.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you. And, you know, I always love what you do. And just to be part of one of your shows with all the legends that you have on, man, it's a complete honor for me.
Oh, man, you a legend yourself, man. I can't wait, man. I can't wait to show the world we got cooking up. And for the record, it's not nothing on there derogatory about Master P. We not promoting none of that. We talking about Tobin's story, because every story has two sides.
Yes.
We out of here. We appreciate you, Tobin.
I appreciate you guys. Be safe. Thank you.
Well, that concludes another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Be sure to download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. For Apple users, find a purple mic on the front of your screen, subscribe to the show, leave a comment and rating. Executive producers for the Gangsta Chronicles podcast are Norman Steele, James McDonald, and Aaron MCA Tyler. Our visual media director is Brian Wyatt, and our audio editor is Taylor Hayes. The Gangsta Chronicles is a production of iHeart Media Network and the Black Effect Podcast Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.